Quick, act natural. Welcome back to the Act Natural podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Farriga.
And I'm the other host, Nick Thaman.
And today we are joined by our two lovely guests.
Hi, I'm Stella Namick.
Hey, I'm Colin Jeter.
And they're actors.
Whoa, are you? I wouldn't have guessed.
We're really switching it up this time. But this time, I mean, well, we're not switching it up, but you guys are both students at Kinsey University.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sometimes we have older folk, but today we have the next generation here in the room with us right now.
Oh,
and lots of pressure.
And also, Colin is our boss, I guess, if you will.
Oh yeah, technically that's true.
Yeah. Anyway. This is actually I'm actually scouting.
Yeah. This is undercover bosses, but you're.
I was gonna say yeah, undercover boss.
Overcover boss. Never mind. So I want to ask you guys. We're reaching the end of the semester. A lot of projects are wrapping up, and as such, you probably have both. I would imagine have been on or are currently in the process of working on, like performing in stuff, be it theater or short film. So talk about that. What have you guys been working on this semester?
Do you want to start?
Sure. Well, this past weekend, I was helping a friend with a horror short film, which was a lot of fun. I got to act as though I had been kidnapped and then took revenge on my kidnappers. So lots of screaming, lots of profanities, but a good time. So, in terms of theater, I haven't been too involved much lately just because film stuff has kind of taken precedent, but I don't know. I'm looking forward to getting back on the stage, hopefully in the future. So yeah, we'll see.
Nice. I have been all over the place these past two semesters. Honestly, I think I've like mapped it all out. I think I didn't go more than 1 week without being in or involved with the production.
Damn.
So yeah, in terms of like the past two semesters, I worked the mics for Cabaret that Kent did. I worked. I was in the ensemble for one of the other plays. I was Benny in Rent that we did a couple months ago. And then I've been doing like fight choreography, and I did short films here and there on and off. I did the voicing over for one of the other short films, Revolt, that Vincent and Natalie were working on, which was a lot of fun.
I just saw the cut of it.
Yeah, you play God, right?
You play like the writer, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah. This, so like, fun. The omnipotent being.
Like keeps changing things and like messing with people.
Mm-hmm. You fight choreography?
Yeah.
Are you choreographing fights or are you fighting?
I do both.
Oh,
so
okay.
I for at least one of the shows that I did, I was choreographing fight scenes and like scenes of intimacy or combat or struggle to make sure that actors either don't get hurt and that it looks realistic. And then I'm also in classes for stage combat.
Oh,
so
nice.
Right now we're doing swords.
That's really good to know because I know a lot of times there's student productions that want to do stunt stuff and cannot find people.
Yeah. Or intimacy.
Or intimacy stuff,
that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. Is intimacy is starting to become a lot more like common, especially in theater spaces. So I'm hoping that it becomes more common in film spaces too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, intimacy I learned really recently intimacy coordinators are like a brand new thing.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, because one of the first productions I like worked on, they had one, and I was like, oh, this is how it works as an intimacy coordinator. But apparently that's
fresh out of the oven kind of.
Yeah.
Crazy to think that was not a thing like in the past.
The intimacy coordinator before was the director who had no ulterior or like other motives for reasons for wanting things to go a certain way. So this is kind of an interesting pairing because, Stella, do you have a minor?
Mm-hmm.
Minor in?
Theater performance.
Oh.
And Colin, what is your major?
My major is theater performance. We're switched.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, my major is digital media production.
That's really funny. We are absolutely switched.
I'm curious what influenced you guys to go with theater versus digital media production because clearly you guys have a passion for both. I'm wondering why the prioritization over the other? Do you prefer the stage? Do you prefer being behind the camera?
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy both a lot, but I think I found and stuck with theater a lot sooner than I stuck with like film. So like I started acting and doing stage stuff very like last half of high school, and so I started doing that and then doing or like trying to find ways to break into voiceover and things like that. And then when I got to college, I realized, like, oh, radio is a thing. And so I started doing that and camera work and things like that. So it ended up being a bleed of both.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm similar in the fact that I actually found theater first. Theater was my, like, basis growing up. Like, I think I was six or seven, my first show that I did. And I did community and community theater, professional theater, and children's theater all growing up. And then in high school, I started to get, not cold feet a little bit, but I started to get a little nervous about my abilities and doubted myself a little bit and was like, maybe I don't want to go into theater. Like, maybe I don't have what it takes, whatever, all that stuff. And simultaneously, I found film through a Netflix movie that was filming. At the time, I was an extra, and I just, that was the first time I had seen all of the sort of like behind the scenes stuff. And because I was such like, I was such a movie buff growing up, mm-hmm. like I watched so many movies and it was always something I really loved. And so seeing the sort of behind the scenes stuff like really interested me. And luckily Kent had such a great program. You know, I'm from the area, so it wasn't hard to choose that. Okay, I think I have a future here. And I think just my skill sets and sort of lended itself nicely to digital media production. And then with that, you know, I wanted to do the theater minor to not only just carry, you know, through my love of theater growing up and, you know, continue with that, but also I think that theater, understanding actors and understanding theater is a really important thing for filmmakers. And so, I'm learning more every day, which is awesome.
Let's back up for a second. You were on a Netflix film.
Yes.
What was that? What was that film called?
It was called White Noise.
Yes, dude. We have. Oh my god.
How many people have you had on this podcast?
You're number four.
Yep, that's what I thought.
People who we've had on this podcast who've worked on White Noise. You're not the last either. Mm-hmm. We have at least one more.
I think one more. Yeah.
But you said working on White Noise is what made you interested in wanting to do film production?
Yes, and it's very interesting because White Noise, from what I have heard and experienced, was the epitome of like what you should not do when you're a multi-million dollar Netflix production.
For one, they shot in Ohio.
They did shoot in Ohio, which is really cool. Actually, like literally the filming location I was at the Boy Scout camp, literally like 20 minutes away from where I lived at the time. So that was really cool. And we could go into it if you want. We can breeze past it if you want. But definitely some interesting experiences there.
I'm gonna go into it.
Okay.
What was your call time like? Well, first of all, what did you do?
So yes, so important piece of information. I was 17. So I was a minor.
Oh.
So my hours and things looked a little different from everyone else. And then also simultaneously was a disaster because I don't know how I got away with this, to be completely honest. I did not have my legal guardians on set. I had my 20-year-old friend who signed over a guardianship waiver be my guardian.
That's how
on
works.
Set. And I think it was a little bit more lenient with me just because I looked older. Like I think the first day I actually was mistaken for an adult actor. That first day my call time was 5 a.m. and then we were there until 2 a.m. the next day, which is not allowed for minors. Nope. And that's an approximation. I don't remember like exactly, but it was late. And I remember like it was such a whirlwind. Like I'd never been, I was an extra, like I was so replaceable, but somehow I like was able to come back for like, I think two and a half weeks that they were filming there. And so I would get to set, you know, you would have to go to costumes. Your guardian would literally have to go in the room with you. Like they would not let your guardian like be out of sight with you, which is good. But then also they had us there past midnight, and under like laws or whatever, some sort of legislation, minors are not allowed to be on set after midnight. And so I remember the second day, the second AD pulled all of the minors and guardians like aside and was like, we are so sorry, and like just started apologizing, being like, if you want to leave right now, like you go right ahead, like we are so sorry, this is apparently you know, the production got into like huge trouble with Netflix because they heard that we were on set so late. Yeah. And so they were like, that is unacceptable. Like, we're going to make sure that you guys are offset. And so me at the time, thinking this was all very cool, I was like, okay, how can I get on set longer? Yeah. And so I remember I literally asked the second AD, I was like, hey, if we're like 17, he was like, no. I was like, well, it was worth a try. But no, it was a really cool experience. Got to do a lot of fun stuff, but and made it into the movie, which is cool. But yeah, definitely there was a lot with that production. A lot of accidents, lots of things that should not have happened and whatnot. But from my perspective as a 17-year-old, it was very, very cool.
How did you get on that? If you weren't interested in, or did you want to do it from like a acting perspective, mm-hmm. and then you saw the production element, or like what got you on set of that at all?
I had the friend who was my legal guardian, mm-hmm. We went to high school together and we had done theater together. And that summer I was volunteering at my high school's like drama program for kids. So I was like just a camp counselor and she was there helping with choreography or something. And she had mentioned that she wasn't going to be there for a little bit because she was doing this really cool thing where she was an extra on the set. And I was like, that sounds so cool. I want in. And so she just like forwarded me the information. And I just like sent in my headshot and resume and next day got a call saying, okay, come to this location for COVID testing and like wardrobe stuff. So I got to do a fitting and all this stuff. So it was really, really cool. My parents were a little like freaked out at first because they had never had anyone in the family like do something like this. So my mom was like, why am I driving you 45 minutes away? What is this massive warehouse? What are these people? Like, it was very weird because it was also during COVID times. Mm. So like it was very, very strict in terms of the protocols and whatnot. But yeah. And then so from there, once I like got on set, even though I was technically doing like an acting related thing, it was so cool to see like giant cranes with cameras and Adam Driver walking past. Like it was really cool.
And Adam Driver was there too.
Yeah, and Greta.
And Greta Gerwig was there too.
She said, excuse me, I was in her way. Highlight of my life.
Yeah.
Was in her way.
I know, Colin, you've done a lot of VO stuff.
Yeah.
Do you prefer, like with stage, or sorry, I shouldn't say stage, with performing, I imagine voice acting, stage acting, and then screen acting are all
vastly different. Yeah. It's a really strange, like, it's a really strange journey that I've gone on with trying to figure out like what different things are needed for each,
mm-hmm.
because like with stage acting, it's a lot broader. It's a lot more specified and sort of, there's a lot of methods to stage acting that we are taught and we are kind of like guided towards doing. Screen acting is a lot more concise and confined, especially since it's like within the confines of a screen and like a more, yeah, just a
closed
much,
off.
Yeah, more intimate space.
Mm, yeah.
And so you have to have your actions and your words can be a little quieter. They can be a little bit more focused and directed. And then voice acting is, at least for what I've done, it's a lot of documentaries that I've done. I've done a couple like commercial stuff or like people just requesting small things, but the biggest thing besides a documentary, like a 3-hour documentary that I recorded over the summer, was I'm the main voice line for the Maryland Food Bank. So if you call into their line, it's me.
That's so funny.
It's really funny because I just went up to my professor one day and I was like, hey, and I just took my phone out and called them and held it up to her ear and she was like, oh, okay, that's you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it's fun. It's a lot of really like interesting things that I've been requested and like are directed to do. But I would love to do animation. That's one of like my main aspirations to do at some point.
Animation is, that's so, oh man. I know we had Katie Buenazold on before and she does a lot of like radio play type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done any VO for animation or radio player at all? Or are you looking to enter the field?
I'd love to enter the field. I graduate in soon, very soon. But when I graduate and I'm currently like looking at auditioning for places, mm-hmm. I have an audition in like a week for Cleveland Playhouse. So things like that, I'm just sort of repetitively going out for and looking at what they need, waiting to hear back from Hadestown. So I love that musical, and I would, because they're going on tour. So me and a couple other people in my class auditioned for them a little while back and are waiting on responses. So we, yeah, I would love to get into animation as like a another path in my career. I also love doing stage stuff. Yeah. So it's a lot that I want to do, and
yeah,
not
that's
nearly
awesome.
Enough time.
Never enough time. Do you prefer to leave voicemails? Like if you're looking for like a voice acting gig, are you like, do you kind of hope that they don't answer so you can be like, hello?
No, I think it's funnier when I hear it live, what the response to my voice is, because I'll answer the, or when I walk into auditions or answer the phone, they were like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, hey. And everyone's like, whoa. It's like, I like either like visually will like perk up or will just have a confused face looking at me the entire time.
That's so funny.
Hmm. Have you done any voice actor work still?
It never saw the light of day, but I did. So I'm a part of a club on campus called the Creator Collective. And for a while we had an audio series where we would do stories, but it would be told in like an audio format. So basically like a podcast kind of, but it was like audio storytelling. And we only ever really, I think, put out like 2 or 3 episodes before it didn't crash and burn, but like it kind of fell apart because the club was focusing on other things, which is whatever. But I did record like a little bit for them in one of the episodes that I don't think ever came out. But I've been a fan of like audio storytelling for, when I tell you like literal years, like my mom and I, when she would be like driving me to like auditions or like whatever, we would always play like children's like podcasts that were like story podcasts. And then when I was in high school, I got really into like mystery and thriller audio stories. And so I have like a lot of like really fond memories of like folding laundry and listening to people in outer space. Like it's so cool to me, and I still like go back to them every once in a while because it's a really cool and comforting thing.
It's a really unique way of storytelling, I feel like, is still despite how popular podcasts are getting, I feel like we still haven't really hit the, I feel like we're waiting on, there's gonna be probably some big breakout audio, you know, radio play series that'll really hit the mainstream in a way that like stuff hasn't before.
There's been a couple. Welcome to Night Vale is one.
Yep.
I listened to one called Limetown. The Bright Sessions is my favorite of all time. Wolf 359. Like, there's been like a lot of really, really good ones that like are very niche.
Yeah.
But I agree. Like, we're still waiting for the one to sort of like breach through.
A lot of audio drama stuff like that is based around people playing D&D.
D&D is where it's starting. Like Dimension 20, I think.
Yeah.
That's where it's beginning to breach.
And I'm
the public.
Totally here for it.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's exciting to see, you know, new different ways of storytelling being offered to people.
Yeah. Do you have like a favorite voice actor?
I don't know. I do a bad job of like researching. Like I don't know. I really do love the woman who does the Bright Sessions. I think her just cadence and tone is so perfect for that medium. But I don't know if I have a favorite voice actor. What about you?
I have a lot. I have like voice actors that I respect and I kind of emulate sometimes, or at least like look at to practice with. And then their voice actors, I'm just like, I just love the way that you do things.
Right.
So like Keith David, who's the voice for the Shadow Man, Dr. Facilier in Princess and the Frog. Mm-hmm. He voiced the cat in Coraline, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He's done a whole bunch of stuff.
Ooh.
He's amazing, and he also kind of has like that deeper, more like grit voice.
Yeah.
So he's always great to listen to. Ashley Johnson,
yep.
who played Ellie in The Last of Us, video game, is another amazing performer. Christopher Judge, who's Kratos in the God of War games, the most recent ones. Yeah, just a whole bunch of people, like Travis Willingham, who was the voice actor, who has voice acted like Knuckles in some of the Sonic games or Thor in some of the Avengers TV shows and stuff like that.
Damn.
I'm personally a Patrick Warburton fan.
Yes.
Dude, I played Skylanders yesterday.
Skylanders?
He's in that game.
I forgot he was.
Yeah, he plays like a misogynist. But it's like quirky. That's kind of unrelated. Dude, this is kind of a tangent. Skylanders is an evil video game.
Evil?
Because there's commercials in the game for the little like guys you can buy. Because you know what it's like? Because you can like get the other like Toys of Life characters.
Uh-huh.
And there's like, you can like unlock power-ups for characters, but it's like a clearly like well-produced commercial for this figure to like, so like you want to go buy it.
Yeah.
That's wild. The marketing side of this kind of stuff is like also a whole other like beast within itself.
Yeah. Advertising.
Skylanders don't sponsor us.
Skylanders. No, I hate Skylanders. I can say that.
Anyways, what's the best food on set?
You guys have been on a lot of sets. Yeah. There's been a lot of food, a lot of Hungry Howies.
Croissants from Costco, number one.
Dude.
I don't know what it is. They are the most like buttery and delicious and like light. I mean, I'm sure they're terrible for you, but they're so good. So whenever I see someone has went to Costco, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a good set.
Yeah.
I've been on a lot more theater things than film sets. So it's like, we don't exactly get like food on set for theater.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, we can get like, well, sometimes the actors themselves will bring in like just snacks or food during like our tens or our lunch breaks. But we don't exactly get like things brought in during techs or during rehearsal runs. We just kind of have
totally
to do that ourselves.
Should. Like, I feel like that's kind of a no-brainer, especially during like tech week and
yeah, it's
kind of
crazy. But like, it'll usually, if we do get anything, if we do get anything, it's usually like friends of the cast members or cast members themselves, or some people on the tech side will, or some people on the, like the production side will be like, hey, I brought things in. Like right. This isn't exactly something you required, but like, I still wanted to bring stuff in.
Yeah.
I was on, I think my first professional or like a regional show I did, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, which is a musical. One of my cast members, their mom made these specialized cookies that like had symbols from the show on them and like baked into them. So like there was a bunch of ones of like people dancing or like one of the silhouettes of one of the dancers and like a axe, because my character carried around an axe a bunch of times.
Wild.
That rocks.
It was really cool.
Do you have, because I imagine that took stage combat, or did you just have an axe?
No, that was stage combat too. Yeah.
Ooh.
That's, I feel like you can't carry around an axe, a character carry around an axe and not expect them to use
Chekhov's
it.
Yeah. Axe.
It was really funny because it eventually got cut and swapped out for a gun because we never fired the guns, but because like at the end of the show there's this big chase scene where everyone's running around and like there's seven brides, there's seven brothers, and there's seven suitors. I was one of the suitors. So the brides are running away from the brothers are trying to get to the brides, and the suitors are chasing after the brothers. So it's this whole, like, everyone running around, and it was really funny. But at the end of the show, like, all the suitors catch the brothers and, like, are holding them, like, are trying to fight them and hold them down. And I originally had an axe, and I was, like, holding it in the air about to hit the main brother. But, like, I think one of the sponsors was, like, that was a little bit too much. Just put him in a chokehold with the gun.
So a gun is less.
Would you say that gun or axe, I guess if you will, was the most interesting prop that you got to use or interact with in any of your like acting experience?
That's a great question. Rent had a lot of really interesting props that I worked with because it was more period piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because so like I was like the in between of it being older than I've known, but still young enough to know what it does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So like I had this really old like block phone that was really fun to run around with, and I would always like angrily slam it and then put the antenna down.
That's awesome.
There was like an actual giant phone booth and a fire hydrant on stage that I accidentally kicked over one show. There was one scene where I, during Christmas Bells, which is one of the big numbers in the show, I had like a wad of money in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
My character's rich. And so there's one of the homeless people's threatening me with a bat. And so I just take a wad of money out and throw it in her face.
does the money say like fake money?
It says it has like people's faces on it, like from the cast and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or like, yes. it's just like random things that like should not be on money.
Mm-hmm. Got you. Stella, what about you? What's the most interesting prop you've ever had to like use or interact with?
That's a good question. I'm like trying to think. Oh, actually, I have one that is very near and dear to me. When I was in high school, my senior show was Once Upon a Mattress, and I played the Jester, which is traditionally like a male role. But they got to change like the octaves and some of the songs and stuff. And so I played it, and I had a Jester stick, and it was like a little wooden stick, and it had a like doll head with like no face on it at the top. And
sick.
They like made a little mini Jester head on the end of the wand.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So the whole show I did like tricks with it, and I got to like whack people with it and
that's fun.
Do lots of fun. It was a very comedic role, which was really fun because I'd never really gotten the chance to like explore.
Tis a Jester after all.
It's a Jester. So that was really cool. Yeah, other than that, I feel like I've done a lot of just I've had some interesting costumes, but
Props.
Yeah.
Then what about costume then?
Well, my favorite was I was Betty Paris in Parrish. I don't remember.
Paris
in the Crucible when I was like 13. So I had this really white, stark white like nightgown. And the whole show, it just would get like progressively dirtier and dirtier and dirtier.
Oh, cool.
And so it was fun in the sense of like, I don't know if it was like necessarily the most unique thing ever, but it was fun to like be 13 and be like, yeah, I get to wear all white and roll around in the dirty stage. And but so that was fun. And then I did like the Wizard of Oz like twice. And so I had lots of really eccentric Ozian and jitterbuggy costumes.
Ooh. Something we worked on a production a couple months ago, Bunkers.
We did work
starring
on
Steve Livingston, who was on a previous episode. Wow. Mm-hmm. But and Steve Knight, who was also on a previous episode. That's unrelated. We learned the difference between props and costumes because we had a fake gun.
Yes.
Theater gun. And we didn't have like an armorer or anyone licensed, so we couldn't have it like be like wielded or held in the production. And we made it, we had like a whole safety meeting. There's like a big, big thing about how this is like on set and all that stuff. And Stella was producer on that. You guys did a fantastic job keeping all of the, oh man. I disagree with my camera work, but thank you. So we kept, it's a prop gun. Sorry. It's not a prop gun.
It's a costume gun.
It's a costume gun. It's a wardrobe gun because it was in the holster of Steve and I the entire time. Mm-hmm. So anytime someone said the prop gun, we'd
be like, nope.
No.
It's a costume gun.
It's a wardrobe gun.
There's a lot of very strange workarounds and roles in film that I feel like you don't necessarily like encounter in theater as much for some reason, even though I feel like you, or I don't know, maybe.
Not really. I think it's because most of the time, all the props that are used in theater are constantly traveling around the stage.
Right.
Mm. So, like, or if they're not traveling around the stage, they are, like, glued to the set.
Yeah.
And, like, so that they don't break off or that they don't end up in places that they're not supposed to be. Yeah, like, I know that especially it gets to be a problem when they are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if they end up getting, or if they leave them in people's pockets.
Yeah.
So, like, that's always happening where, like, a set of keys that's important to the story is in someone's jacket pocket that's down the hall now on a rack.
Right. Yeah. There's lots of interesting things regarding props and costumes and the difference between costumes and props and
and special effects and stunts.
That was another thing we learned.
Yeah. Steve and I bust down a door, which is a special effect.
Practical effect. Actually.
Practical effect.
Oh.
Because.
So a stunt involves, you know, I'm not even going to speak on this because I am not the one.
It was an effect, and we did
it. Ask Olivia, our director knows.
We practically did it.
Mm-hmm.
We were practical, and we practically made it look cool.
I think it was because it didn't involve like someone actually doing something that was a stunt. You know what I mean? Like it involved a door falling,
it was like a really flimsy.
Yeah. There was very little room for something to go wrong. I don't know.
And nothing went wrong.
Nothing went wrong.
So, great success.
Cool. Yeah.
It was very cool.
We did get that checked
from a stunt coordinator.
We did, yeah.
So don't come for us.
No. Yeah, there was talk.
It was an illegitimate.
Yes.
Classifying thing.
We're not just saying.
We're not just saying that to say it. We did have actual professional advice there.
Just lying.
Lying to get away with it. No.
You guys have done. I know you did, Colin. You did Werewolf Cop, which is the first thing I saw you in, actually.
Oh my god.
Which is a genre parody comedy piece.
Yep.
You play like the no nonsense police chief.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
I really liked your performance in that one. It's very goofy. But genre is kind of a whole different, because like at our level with like shorts and stuff like that, it's like there is drama, which is just anything that could feasibly happen in real life. And then there's just like everything else, like Western, sci-fi, fantasy, horror. Okay, yeah, that one's a little bit easier to do. What genres have you guys been a part of in terms of stage? I feel like it's a little bit, I don't want to say easier, but it's a little bit more feasible, I think, because there's that disbelief the audience, or it's that suspension of disbelief the audience gets with it. But with screen acting, what genre pieces have you guys been a part of?
In terms of screen, I do a lot more of, besides Werewolf Cop, I have, and we also have this thing, like we have types and like our sort of our go-to roles that we are usually considered for. For me, I, both for stage and screen, I get a lot of like the older brother or the bigger sibling sort of dynamic. I get a lot of villains. I get a lot of dads. I get a lot of things like that. So for screen, in terms of genre, I've done, the closest thing I've done to horror or like thriller would probably be Revolt.
Thriller?
Yeah, I'd say
it's a thriller.
Yeah, I'd say it's because it's like, it's threatening to the people involved.
Okay.
Comedy is definitely Werewolf Cop. Action comedy was Starfighter Go. I'm trying to think of like other stuff that I'd done in terms of, I did Chances, which is also kind of like a drama, so that where I was a villain in that. I played this, I think my name was like Mick or Chuck or something like that. But
Mick Chuck.
Yeah, but in terms of like stuff for stage, the closest I've gotten to horror was doing Sweeney Todd.
Ooh. Sweeney.
That sounds familiar.
Sweeney Todd?
Tell the tale of Sweeney Todd.
Yep, I was a Judge Turpin.
Nice.
The Sweeney is a really fun show.
Oh my gosh, if you guys ever get the chance to see, do you know what Sweeney Todd is about? The Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Wow.
So he's a barber who kills people.
I'm getting deja vu right now. I feel like somebody has talked about Sweeney Todd on a previous episode.
It's currently on Broadway.
Why? Yeah. Like,
mayhaps.
Anyways.
Yeah, very fun.
Sweeney Todd was the closest I've gotten to horror. I've done a lot of I do a lot of like villains genuinely in a lot of what I do, or like antagonists. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I did Matilda, which was a lot of fun. I played like 8 different characters and was like constantly changing in and out of different costumes.
Is that hard? Like to switch between different characters between different scenes in theater?
It depends on the show, because like for Matilda, it was a lot easier in some way because it was a clearer distinction of what different characters I was playing. Because it was like me switching from a children's entertainer who didn't like their job, and I could be a lot. I changed my voice so I could be a lot less like, eh. Yeah. I was like, I don't like these kids, so I did that. And
kids shows I feel are easier to do that with, because when it's written for an audience that is young, a lot of the characters are like much bigger and like lively than, you know, if you're writing a show for an adult audience, those tend to be more.
And so switching from like that, like I don't like my job character to this fantasized escapologist who was like, who's basically a symbol for what Matilda wants her dad to be, and I could be a lot more, I could just choose to be that more caring, that more fanciful, like floaty type character, and then going on stage like in 5 minutes later and being a school kid and acting like a brat the whole time.
So the bigger leaps are actually easier?
I think so, because, or at least the more distinct leaps, because if you're going just from like a regular person to then going to a regular person but a different scenario, or a regular person with a different like circumstance, it's a lot harder to make those, or at least for me, it's a lot harder to be like, okay, I'm regular person, like 8, and now I'm regular person 2.
Yeah. I'm usually just regular person all the time. That was so stupid. Stella, what genre stuff have you been a part of?
I have done so much horror, like both in front and behind the camera. Like I feel like it's probably just because student films, that tends to be the like niche that people like the most or find is easiest or whatever.
Horror is pretty common, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like I've done a lot, especially like behind the scenes with horror. In terms of like acting specifically, I've done a lot of like contemporary stuff, dramas mostly. Mm-hmm. I haven't done like a whole lot of comedies. I did like one like informational thing. I did like a, I forget what like you would even call it, but like there was a scenario.
PSA?
It's like a PSA, yeah, okay. Where it's like, don't drink and drive, kids. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. We had to like act as though we were in a scenario, whatever. But in terms of theater, I've done a lot of musical theater, which is a genre within itself, I feel. Yeah, there's just so much with theater. But definitely like in terms of like plays, more contemporary stuff.
Hmm.
Crucible, I think, is probably my like most horror adjacent theater thing. And then I've done a couple like anthologies. So when I was in high school, I did like All in the Timing, and which is very niche, but it's sort of like one act, you know, like little clips of like one act plays. So yeah, I think it just depends on, you know, where I'm at.
Where am I going with this? For horror, and horror short films, or really just student short films in general, this is for either of you guys. Have the films that you've been a part of, do they ever have happy endings?
I don't think so. I think it's hard because, and not to like hate on student films.
Please,
but
please hate on them.
Something I've definitely noticed is that people will have a really clever idea or something. And then they just kind of leave it at that. Like they don't find a way to resolve anything. Mm-hmm. They don't find a way to like explain why something's happening is happening. Like
Yes. It's
very cut and sort of just like left there to exist.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I think is cool is when a student film does a horror, but in a way that presents itself to the audience with a specific like underlying theme that's not just like, oh, here's something that's horror, be scared.
Mm-hmm.
Like Revolt, like we were just talking about, is really cool because there's an underlying layer of like, oh, actually this is what the film's really about, being told through like this lens. So things like that I think are definitely more clever and harder to do and pull off.
Yes.
But yeah, it is something that I've noticed a lot with like student films, that people just fall into the trap of like, oh, there's a really cool idea, great, let's kill everyone, bye.
I think every script that I've written or anything I've shot has always ended in a bad ending. I don't think I write happy endings.
I think happy endings are harder to do short term.
Those are almost cheesy sometimes too, at least in my opinion.
I think it's a generational thing.
Mm.
I think the media that is like made by people represents kind of how they feel about the world. And I don't think a lot of people our age are super optimistic with like the future of things. And so I feel like therefore the endings of films oftentimes kind of reflect that.
That's a really good pessimism.
Yeah, because I was going to say that I believe that too. And I kind of see that because a lot of the movies that we watched when growing up were like that were a lot longer ago in terms of when they were made. It's a lot like something happens, things fight, like people fight. Things get blown up, the guy gets the girl at the end.
Yeah, but it's going to be okay in the end.
Yeah, it's like that was kind of the formula. Mm-hmm. And now more often, we still get those, like they get together at the end, but there's a lot more that's been lost on the way there. Or if it's like a lot more like you were saying, where it's like, it's not a happy ending, they've lost everything and are just having to start over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I've had a I think my happiest ending was probably Werewolf Cop, and it's a satire comedy.
Yeah, I feel like, too, it extends beyond just, like, student films, which this might be kind of sad, actually, when you think about it, but, like, even if we look at the types of films that are being made nowadays, that are getting recognition, a lot of them are very sad. Like, just end.
It's a cultural thing entirely.
And that's why I think I love it when movies nowadays do end happily, because I feel like it's sort of a optimistic outlook on life of like, oh, okay, maybe there is still some good that exists.
I look forward to seeing a lot more joy in performances and movies, because it can kind of get tiring and like daunting just always being like, oh, I'm sad now.
Right.
Yeah.
Very
I think
depressing.
My favorite, the needle that I like to thread is the bittersweet ending, where like you said, Colin, there's a lot that is lost at the cost of like maybe the goal being achieved. This is such a basic bitch answer, but I love La La Land.
I was literally going to bring up La La Land.
I love that movie. And the ending is like, in my opinion, such a perfect encapsulation of bittersweet, where the characters get what they want, but at the cost of their own it's just, it is such a good way to end a movie, in my opinion.
Their objective has been the same throughout, but also their like sub-objective has changed, if that makes sense. Like, they both got what they wanted out of their careers at the end, but the way that they got there and who they spent that time with changed.
And that's kind of something that I've also had a little bit of a hand in directing, either actors or just small scenes. And so, especially with shows that like are, that don't end happy, or that like have like these sad endings, I keep reminding my actors, reminding people that I work with, that like, you don't know how this is going to end. So don't think, oh, this is ending badly, or this ends badly. Mm-hmm. And so that influences how you act throughout the entirety of the thing. If you want something to go well, you sort of like act that way. Mm-hmm. Like, you act like, oh, I'm happy, things look like they're going my way. And then when it changes and it goes the opposite, that's where that like emotional connection hits. We're like, oh my God, they were so close.
Yeah.
You've directed?
A little bit, yeah. I directed this in a theater. We have something called a freshman showcase. And so I directed a scene between just two people. And that was a lot of fun working with the two of them. So it's like this whole collection of the freshman class getting to do scenes and like little songs and sonnets and stuff like that, and I just directed one of those little things.
How has being a performer, being on that other end, how does that influence your directing style? I mean, with the one time you did it, because you guys and Stella, you guys both, have a lot of experience performing, and then being on the other end of that, I imagine that probably is extremely informative.
Not every performer can be a director, I've realized, because it's not to say that like if you are an actor you shouldn't try directing. You should at some point, at least like see how you feel with it. It's just there is so much, I think I'm used to being like, okay, these are my confines, these are what I need to like look at as an actor. Yeah, I can mess around and play with that. But as a director, it's so much of a brighter scope of like, how does this picture look? How does this sort of, what does it look like to somebody else? What does it look like to me? Mm-hmm. What is my vision? Why is it different than what I'm seeing right now? Yeah. So yeah, it's a lot of like learning to live with, it's learning to love what you are seeing rather than what you are making in your mind.
Yeah. Mm. I'll definitely say, so I've directed both stage and film.
Screen,
When I'm working with actors on stage, and when I say this, I'm working with high school actors, so just keep that in mind.
Actors.
I think a lot of it for me, in my experience from acting or directing with stage actors, is that a lot of it is helping them understand the text, helping them understand what they're saying, and really getting, especially with young like kids, getting them to understand like why they're doing what they're doing in a scene, and like what their obstacles are, their objective is, what their given circumstances are. Just to help them better understand, okay, like, why am I doing this? Why am I acting this way? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it with theater, I think it takes time to, like, really hone in. And like Colin was saying, like, there's so many different aspects you have to be aware of when you're directing, that for me, I think it's better when you build little by little instead of just trying to piece it all together once, which I don't really think anyone does. But, you know, you start with the performance, right? Talking actors through it, help them endow the space, help them start to understand, okay, where am I coming from? Where am I going? you know, that sort of stuff and building from there. That way, when you get to a point where, you know, you got crunch time, you can have confidence that, like, okay, your actors got this. Let me focus on directing the other aspects of, like, okay, instead, now let's focus on the blocking. Let's do this. Film, I think it's completely different. There's some overlap in terms of the way that you speak to actors and how you talk to them, which always should be with a lot of care, specifically in student productions. Mm-hmm.
The word pamper, I think, has been used on this podcast before.
I think so, yeah.
In a non-judgmental way, mm-hmm. it's an art form. It's a very delicate process. Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
People don't give enough credit to actors.
No, they do not.
What actors do is so specific and so insanely hard for other people to understand. Like, and it seems like one of those things that is very like, oh, you're just pretending. People do not understand how much goes into
it.
No,
they don't.
And I think that the biggest thing that you can do as a director for your actors on like when you're working in film is to give them space on set, give them a space to go and sit in between takes, giving them the opportunity to just like breathe and not constantly being jostled around, because then you let your actor live in whatever they need to live in that moment.
We use this a lot in the world of theater, but like I... at least my professors have, is giving room to play, mm-hmm. or just allowing yourself to play.
Mm-hmm.
Because like we like are basically kind of like being make-believe as a career.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we get like having that chance to explore and just discover the wonder and discover the joy and the little like specificity in what we're creating makes it so much more enjoyable and lively than just looking at words on a page.
Right. And I think, too, that also it will explain to some people how, like, okay, there's a reason that stand-ins exist in the film world.
Yeah.
There's a reason that there is such a short amount of time from the time that picture's ready to the time that actors get on set and how quickly they leave and exit, because it is a whole art form within itself. And so for me personally, when I'm directing actors, you know, I really try and have a rehearsal time beforehand. I really try and, like, work with them prior to when they're like actually stepping on set, mm-hmm. because once they step on set, you know, especially as a director, when you're directing film, you have like no second to breathe. Like, you can't go to the bathroom, you can't do anything, like you are just in it. And so you don't want to try and be constantly switching gears between like a sound person being like, hey, I'm having this issue with sound, like, you know, it's going to be 10 more minutes, to juggling, okay, where are the extras, where is the camera supposed to be, plus trying to direct an actor, because you're just not going to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just my experience with that.
That's what I've learned to appreciate, the insane delegation of tasks on sets, because for that exact reason, like the first AD is should be in charge of that. Yeah, when I'm directing, I always, my instinct is to immediately be like, is to immediately talk to the crew or to like talk to the cinematographer, like see how that looked or whatever. But it's, I think if I was an actor, which I'm not, I would much prefer a director who is also an actor. Like I would rather versus the other way around. Like I feel like people like Greta Gerwig, for instance, who can perform, but then also can you know, be behind the camera and direct. I think that pipeline of actor to director is probably more, I would think probably better, leads to a potentially better results, just because the whole purpose of the director is to, you know, do the performance, work with the performance.
I think it's a real shame that, not to shit on Kent State, but in this major in digital media production, I think it is such a shame that we're not required to take an acting class.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's actually abhorrent. Like, I think it's horrendous that we're not required to at least once, because they throw us into these classes like directing and production one, expecting us to work with actors, and we spend maybe one day in class talking about, okay, don't tell an actor just to be happy. Tell them how you want them to be happy, and that's it.
That's it.
So, and I think there is such a disrespect sometimes that
we
encounter here, unfortunately, with young directors who just don't understand. And when I say like taking an acting class, I don't mean just putting on a play or like giving people sides and being like, act out the scene. I think like actually teaching students what acting is, mm-hmm. and like what acting looks like and how actors act, like
methods and stuff like that.
And so, because I think once you get that understanding, your entire perspective changes a little bit.
I would love for DMP students to be able to come to like more Kent productions and our stage productions, or even just go into like shadow some of our acting classes, because I'm in a class right now called Suzuki, which is a method of acting and a method of movement, which is also very specific to acting and performance, where right now we're doing, basically our task is to embody a Greek god or a Greek myth. And so mine is Hades. And what we do is we have to embody this Greek myth using very specific, we're using only a set, like only a couple of words that aren't really sentences. It's not sentences, it's like words. So like mine are death, brothers, father, queen, king. That's what I do, and those are my words for my scene, and we have to tell the story of that myth. And I just think it's so interesting to see. I just think it's interesting seeing what actors sort of are thinking of, and then going into like the world of DMP and seeing what like the cinematographers and the directors and the producers are thinking of.
Yeah. And a good cinematographer, director, producer will understand, or at least try to understand, what's happening in the world of an actor. And I think those are the productions that have the highest success rates.
Yeah. A lot of the big fun that I had on Good Riddance was that while the directors and the people working on the camera were trying to figure out what they wanted for a shot, it was just me and my co-star Bug and my Saida. We would just look at each other and be like, I think that'd be funny. And so we're trying to work stuff out. And like, I'm moving my wrist around and like, oh yeah, this hurts. It'd be funny if you just like dived across me and laid on the hurt wrist. And so
there was a lot of physical comedy in that too. That's a whole other thing that like is interesting, is like the different types of performance aspects, like physical versus mental versus whatever.
It was kind of because me and my co-star are very, very close. We've known each other since freshman year. And so we have that level of like comfortability with each other, that when we were trying to think of stuff to do that would be funny for the scene, we were like, you throw yourself around almost any time and I can take a hit, just jump on me.
The leaving actors to, kind of like you were talking about, leaving actors to their own devices to play, and like you talked about, Stella, with the actor giving their own, having their own space to work on stuff, feels to me a little, that's not what I would imagine actors would want, because like I've found, we talked about this before on the podcast, about actors feeling disconnected from the rest of the set, feeling like there's all the DMP students and then there's the actor. And so it's interesting you bring that up, because I've felt like trying to keep the actor as involved with the production as possible, not helping with setting up or gear or anything like that. I hate when that happens. Not because it's like an ego thing, but it's like that should be the absolute last thing you need to worry about right now. But you're saying it is important to give the actors that space and to have them not separate, but I don't know.
The reason I say it is because, and this is hard, it's a hard line when it's student productions, because we're all friends. But an actor's there to do a job at the end of the day. And ultimately, it'll all depend on the actor. Like, some actors may want to be in the chaos of it, right? That might help them. That might be their distraction from, you know, a really intense scene. Like, I don't know. But the reason I say separate is because you want to avoid overwhelming an actor in the sense of, like, there's a lot happening. There's a lot of people who might be kind of angry at each other at the moment, trying to figure out how to get a boom pole together or something. You know what I mean? Like, there is a lot of chaos and a lot of frantic things happening that if an actor's in the middle of, I feel could sometimes be overwhelming to them, and we don't necessarily need to subject them to that when they need to be focusing on their performance. And the social element of it is also something, there's something to be said for that. And I get the fear of like wanting to, you know, create like two separate, you know, areas where like only actors are here, only crew are here, don't intertwine, right? But that's what like lunch is for. You know, in my mind, like that's what, you know, meeting with at a table read beforehand, introducing people, just giving that familiar vibe to it, and also not like confining people to each space. So like if an actor wants to come and just view what's happening, like let them, you know, if a crew member needs to, you know, I don't know, like ask this person a question about something, like let them go do that. So I think not having hard and fast rules for it, but also just having a space that an actor can go to if they choose to be quiet, to get in that headspace, that can be really helpful.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense. That's working with actors and that's a really lunch is for. Yeah. lunch can really be the make or break of the vibes for sets. Mm-hmm. If everyone's kind of in their own little, if everyone's definitely in their zone.
Mm-hmm.
That was it's a big what am I trying to say? It is a big morale thing to try and keep everyone together,
mm-hmm.
and involved. With preparing before getting to the set, you talked about rehearsals, you talked about rehearsing with actors. How often on a digital media production student film set as a performer, have there been rehearsals either before, like on the day before shooting started, or like an earlier day? Or was it you just kind of like there was the table read and then you showed up and performed? Was there, how many sets had that interim between that?
One or two at most.
I have not had one, at least not to my memory, of where I was able to go there. Well, I've been on sets where like in between things happening, I was able to go with the actors or sit with the director and be like, okay, these are the lines. This is how you want me to read them. Okay, cool. And then go and do them. But I don't think I've ever gone to a table read for DMP.
You've never done a table read?
I don't think so.
Interesting.
Wow.
I think it's something that comes with like as you progress in the major and get on productions that are like production two versus production one, mm-hmm. projects sometimes. And table reads and like whatnot can look different. Like from my experience, I've had rehearsals that involved like choreography, which is why we had the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. And then I've also had rehearsals where it's been the director and the actor sitting in the holding area, like on bunkers, going through the scene while crew's getting set.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that counts as rehearsal. That's a space that you can talk through it and go through it, even if it is on the day. I mean, I personally would always prefer to try and have a day outside of the chaos of like we have a schedule to keep to, mm-hmm. to just run through the scene practice. But yeah, I think it depends on the production, and unfortunately on student productions you don't have a lot of time within a semester to do that kind of stuff. So
also unfortunately usually in a separate production or in separate like shows while this one is also being filmed, or while this one's also setting up. So like
people are busy.
Very.
We I learned extremely recently rehearsals are important, just because me and Anthony are taking producing for Picture right now, and we've had to like budget rehearsal times into shoots. And then I was like, wait a minute, should we be doing rehearsals for the things we shoot?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
It is extra time and effort, but it feels like a no-brainer. Because I hate this was talked about on a previous episode, I believe, but I hate when, for both my sake and the actor's sake, if they go on the set, they've gone through the lines, they have a certain idea of how the character works and operates, take one happens, and the actor and director are just on different wavelengths.
Yeah.
And then the decision has to be made. Do you go up to them and go, like,
in front of
everybody and be like, how do you say, like, do something completely different?
Right.
Or usually what I do is I will acknowledge that this is a disconnect. Well, I won't just say that outright, but what I will usually do is I'll kind of just try to like accept that this is how the actor is going to be playing this character,
right?
And then try to massage a version of what I would kind of like a compromise, if you will, because I just don't think it would be productive to just like stop and be like, You should,
That's why rehearsals are
important. That's why rehearsals are important, yeah.
And, it's tough because whenever that happens, it's not only clear to the actor and the director that that's what's happening, but it's clear to the 20 other people that are in the room. And then that's a whole other level of uncomfortability that you're not only subjecting yourself to as a director, but also that actor too.
Yeah.
And then you have them doubting themselves about, is this not like what I... This is what I prepared for. This is what I spent 2 weeks practicing and writing in my script of action words that, helped me get to this place. Like, so it's a lot of times too, the table read is helpful for this because that's a time when you can be like, so what are you thinking about for this character? Here's what I'm thinking. And then that's when you work on it and help build that structure for the character.
Do you think it's important to understand like all the various methods that go into acting? Do you guys prescribe to specific methods?
I have a couple that I have like designated for myself that I've utilized, especially on things that are a lot more intense and a lot more like engaged. So I have this thing called the anatomy of an argument, where like if it's a scene where I'm having a fight with a person, I'll direct the way my body moves, the way my words sort of are, the way that I talk and inflect my words based on how I think an actual wound would feel.
Oh, okay.
So, like, if I want it to be like I just want to shut you down now, it's all directed at the head or at the, like, chest or at the heart, things like that. But if I'm, like, kind of dancing around it, making fun or poking fun, it'll go for, like, the arms or the leg. Like, I'll make it sort of, like, more like the body, the arms, the legs, the limbs, to be, like, more demeaning. So things like that.
Huh. That's cool. no, but that's like the like Stella was saying, action words, like attributing what you're trying to say to like a physical,
the actor's thesaurus, man.
Yeah,
it's important.
The Bond method.
There's the theater program here at Kent is amazing. They have so many great professors. Like currently, I'm taking acting process
with who?
Courtney.
Yes.
So that class has been really eye opening for me and like very helpful in terms of like just understanding the acting process. And it also sort of helps you understand that like in that class, what's interesting is you're actually not you're not taught different methods of acting in the acting process class. You're taught to sort of develop your own method.
Okay.
So you're taught, okay, play around, figure out what works, what doesn't. So like something actually that happened to me this past week is I was really struggling. Sorry, there's a hair on my microphone. It's distracting. I was really struggling with the scene because the scene is it's from the play Seminar. And my monologue through that scene is very like angry and very fed up. And I could not for the life of me figure out how to like start the scene. Like my moment before, right? They talk about moment before, moments after. I couldn't figure out like, how do I enter the scene already angry to the level that the character needs to be? And for me, what helped was doing jumping jacks and vocal, exercises. So like before the scene I was literally like doing jumping jacks and going and it helped. Like it helped get that heart rate up, it helped with the physical and the like intonation of vocal strength or whatever that I needed to sort of jumpstart me into the scene. And that's another thing too in terms of like when you're doing monologues or scenes for class versus an actual play, is that it's similar to film in the sense of you have to just jump into it. You don't get a buildup. You know, when you're doing a play, you get a natural flow of like, okay, you're starting at a neutral place. You're getting progressively more and more angry and you're going from scene to scene. You have a flow.
It's more intuitive.
Right. Whereas with film and these theater scenes for class, a lot of times it is you kind of have to get yourself there within like a moment's notice. And so that's for me the hardest part and something I'm still working on. But
something a lot of people in our major take for granted.
Yes. And I think too, there needs to be an understanding that sometimes like, especially when you're working with film, just give actors a couple minutes before. So you might be ready to like shoot. The AD might be like, you have 10 minutes to get the rest of the scene. But like give your actor a few takes to like warm up to it. Give your actor as much time as they need before your action, right? Like just sort of see how the actor feels in those situations. Because even if you spend more time with the buildup, it might pay off in having to do less takes, or it might pay off in having to do less work to get them where they need to be.
And what you're kind of saying about like needing to get yourself in the mindset of like, I'm in the present moment, I'm not angry, but I need to make myself mm-hmm. feel angry, or like I need to get myself to the point of the emotion the character is in, like in a Rent after I'll Cover You reprise. Mm-hmm. We go off stage and then we come back on for another song, and all the like we're all backstage or behind the stage, and we're all like, it's the saddest point in the show. Mm-hmm. We're all so sad, and we all love each other because we're friends and castmates, mm-hmm. but we have to be angry at each other in the next scene. So we get backstage and like we're crying and we hug and then we go, all right. And then we all just start flipping each other off to get mad.
Yeah. And Rent's a hard one too, because you have like time jumps.
Yeah.
It's like it's
time like jumps and the entire show is sung.
Yeah.
And pretty much the whole show is sung. So like it's a lot harder to be like, all right, I have to convey this emotion while also singing.
6 months have passed. Yeah.
That is kind of a compromise with the starting and stopping of film, but then the continuation of theater is you get the both extremes. Man, oh man, a lot of stuff we've talked about today. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff about the acting process. But unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this episode of the Act Natural Podcast.
Do you guys want to go ahead and plug any of your socials or things that you're working on coming out soon? You know, whatever. This is your time to speak.
For me, it's Stella Namek at Instagram. It's just my name. And then for upcoming projects, I've done a lot of producing work this semester, so lots of fun projects on the way. I have a website, stellanamek.com. Can find what I'm up to there, and yeah, just following along with the journey, I guess.
Yeah. Colin Jeter, I'm madbull_FTW on Instagram. I'm making a website. Look out if you are in Ohio in the next coming months. Jesus Christ Superstar will be premiering at Porthouse Theater, and I'll be Caiaphas, one of the evil priests. So keep an eye out for that. I also, if you ever get a chance, anything like that, keep an eye out for the Black Theater Association. I'm graduating this semester, but we will be doing projects in the future when my predecessors are going to keep up. But yeah.
Huge.
And you can follow us on Instagram at actnaturalpod, because I took the cast out of the handle to put a spell on you, the viewer, or the listener, to follow us.
Follow us now.
I put a spell on you.
Thank you guys for having us.
No, thank you.
Thank you for coming on. And with that,
hear you later. Bye.
Bye. Oh, I peaked the mic.